This audio presentation was pre-recorded and edited for brevity and clarity.
Hello, I'm Michael Buckley with the Bright Focus Foundation. I want to welcome you to today's Bright Focus chat. Today's chat is how low vision services can help you. If this is your first time on a Bright Focus chat, welcome. And let me take a moment to tell you about Bright Focus and what we'll do today. Bright Focus Foundation funds some of the top researchers in the world. We support scientists all around the globe that are trying to find cures for macular degeneration, glaucoma, and Alzheimer's. And we share the latest news and developments from these scientists with families that are impacted by these diseases. We have a number of free publications and plenty of materials on our website, brightfocus.org, that offer tips for living with diseases such as macular degeneration. And today's Bright Focus chat is another way of sharing this information. We're really fortunate to be joined today by someone who was on a chat a little over a year ago. That's Dr. Ranju Prasad with the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. Dr. Prasad, thank you for coming back and joining us again. And I wonder if we could just start off with you telling us a little bit about your background.
Yes, of course. Thank you so much for having me again. It's my pleasure to be here. Currently, I'm the director of the Penn Center for Low Vision. It's part of the Shea Eye Institute, which is the Department of Ophthalmology of the University of Pennsylvania Health System. And I've actually been working here for about 16 years, been the director for about a year. So I've been here for a while, been doing this for a long time.
Well, that's great. And Just out of curiosity, how did you end up choosing this line of work?
When I was a fourth-year optometry student, I had the opportunity to observe and work with another low-vision optometrist for a three-month rotation, and she was also a low-vision specialist. So when I was working with her, I saw the magic that she did with some of these patients who had vision loss and who had a lot of difficulties, and basically watched her improve their quality of life. And I just knew right then and there that's what I wanted to do. And she ended up being my mentor and my colleague, and I have the utmost regards for her. Her name is Dr. Janet Steinberg, and she was also the former director here.
Wow. Well, that's great. And I'm really struck by your use of the word magic to describe it. It's really, really impressive.
Yeah.
So today we'll be talking about how low vision services can help you. And a question that's already been submitted, I think, is a great way to get started. Linda from Maryland was wondering if you could define what is low vision. Like, is there a specific number, 20, 30, whatever. We hear the phrase low vision a lot, but I'm not sure folks exactly know what it means. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I understand, because a lot of I have people asking me the same question again. Do I have low vision? What is low vision? But I basically define it as a reduction in visual function as a result of an eye disease, which cannot be corrected with surgery, medications, and or conventional glasses or contacts. So it's basically anyone who's been diagnosed with an eye condition, such as macular degeneration, glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, or any of the hereditary eye diseases, among many others, and who have a reduction in function because of their vision. And I've seen in many situations where people don't have much vision loss, where their visual acuity is essentially pretty good. They can still drive, but they have problems with glare or they have problems with detail. So as I said, it's anybody who can't do the things that they used to do the way they would like to.
That's interesting. So it sounds it's more of a description than a numeric thing.
Correct.
Dr. Prasad, what would you suggest be the first step for someone who is hoping to make the most out of their remaining vision?
Well, the first step would be to let their doctors know, to just tell them what their difficulties are. I'm having problems reading. I'm having problems seeing faces. And then the doctor, their eye doctor, will then probably ask them a little more detailed questions and probably refer them to somebody who would be able to help them achieve their functional goals again. So the first step is just to let somebody know, or let their doctors know.
That's great. And I guess that kind of sets up one area that I'd like you to educate our audience about. To me, as a non-physician, it's like this alphabet soup of of specialties, LVT, CVRT. It seems like there's about four or five of them. I was wondering if you could take a moment to sort of explain some of these acronyms or letters that people, that patients might hear about but not completely understand. So I want to start with an LVT.
An LVT is a low vision therapist, and these are individuals who have pretty much a master's level of education, and they evaluate an individual's functional vision and its relation to their vision and disability. They're not what they call certified. So they also have therapists that are certified through the Academy for Certification of Vision Rehabilitation and Educational Professionals, too.
Great. And then there's a CVRT?
Yeah. So a CVRT is a Certified Vision Rehabilitation Therapist, and they also evaluate and train the visually impaired individuals in their home environment and work environment. These people are also involved in training the blind people who are blind, who have very, very low vision too. So that group of individuals have a special type of training and rehabilitation.
Great. There's a few more I wanted to ask you about. CLVT.
That's a certified low vision therapist. So these individuals are certified through the ACVRP. They've passed a written exam. They've submitted, you know, a certain number of coursework, certain number of clinical training as well.
Mm-hmm. Next to last one in the alphabet soup here, OT.
Occupational therapist. Mm-hmm. So an occupational therapist are licensed providers and who follow the medical model of rehabilitation. They perform full functional evaluations. They also need a script or a prescription from a licensed provider such as your ophthalmologist, primary doctor, or optometrist. And they basically use other means as well to address what your goals are. In addition, so for example, they'll look at your cognition, they'll look at your motor range of motion, sense of touch.
Well, that's great. It seems like it seems like it brings in a lot of the challenges that people might have.
Yeah.
And then lastly, what does a COMS do?
So it's a certified orientation and mobility specialist, and these individuals evaluate and train the person to determine their position in an environment and to navigate safely from point A to point B. So, for example, if someone has difficulty going up and down stairs and curbs, we would refer that patient to an orientation mobility specialist to be evaluated and further trained. The specialist also trains the individual with a cane if needed to. And they also are certified through the ACV or EP.
Well, great. Thank you. This has been real helpful. We already have a few questions coming in that I'd like to turn to. Dr. Broussard, Carol from Ohio has a question about the loss of central vision that comes from macular degeneration. Is there a particular specialist that is best suited to help someone that loses central vision? And she mentions that this can make it hard to do specific tasks around the house. So sort of a general thoughts about someone that's starting to experience those challenges?
Yeah. So with macular degeneration, as we know, like you said, it affects your central vision, which is your detailed vision. If you have one eye that's much worse than your other, individuals lose their ability to see depth, and their contrast sensitivity is reduced. So the first step would be to get them to a low vision specialist to see if they have the best prescription, because sometimes just making little tweaks in their glasses is beneficial for them. Then to see if there's special aids or devices that can help. And the next step after that would be of referral for rehabilitation, whether it be an occupational therapist or a low vision therapist, to help train them better with any devices that are prescribed, or to also use adaptive techniques and environmental adaptations that could help. So the one thing that also can happen with the loss of depth perception is your ability to do certain tasks, such as you know, hammering a nail or painting your fingernails and things like that. So a rehabilitation specialist can help you achieve those goals.
Well, that's great. It's very helpful. Judy from Pennsylvania has a question. Wondering why is it that sometimes glasses will not make your vision better if your vision is worsening? It seems, you know, to a lot of people that glasses, that's the point of glasses, they make your eyesight better. But I was wondering if you could kind of elaborate on that point.
Yes, and that's the a very common perception that people have. They think that just because their vision is getting worse, they can change their glasses and their vision's going to get better. That's not always the case. So remember that with macular degeneration, glaucoma, diabetic retinopathy, the problems are with the ocular health. So for macular degeneration, for example, you lose your central vision. No matter how much we change the lenses in front of your eye, if your retinas are not the same way as they used to be, it's not going to improve your vision. The example that I always give is a camera. And way back in the day, remember film. If you had film,
in the 1900s,
like film, or even I always use film because if you have, you know, let's say for example, the retina is like the film on a camera. If you have film which has a thumbprint on it or have a spot on it, no matter how much you change the lenses in the front, it's not going to affect the image. It's not going to affect the final, the final image.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. It's a great way to describe that. We have two callers who asked very similar questions about lighting around the house. Where one listener is, you know, saying that her eyesight is dimmer than it used to be, and how can it make things brighter? And another caller wonders if there's special lighting that can help with geographic atrophy. So I'm kind of assuming those are the similar top questions to bunch together there.
Yes. So there is, believe it or not, there is a lot of science behind lighting. So it depends on the color temperature of the light, which I'm not going to get into, but that matters. So when I mean by color temperature, is it a cool light, like a fluorescent light, or is it a warmer light, like the old incandescent? How bright it is, how it's positioned, and whether it's diffuse or direct. So all of that matters. Now, is one better for the other? Is one better than the other? It all depends on what you do. So, for example, someone with geographic atrophy, if they're doing near tasks, they would do better with a direct light focused right on their paper. But that may not be the case if you're in the house, for example.
Yeah.
And it's also very, very subjective, too. Subjective.
Nice.
So there are therapists out there who do specific lighting evaluations specific to the task that they're doing, and the environment as well.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Kind of a question. I know you're a doctor and not a tax expert, but we had one person call and wondering how does one get labeled or declared legally blind for tax purposes? And certainly if this question's not, you know, in your wheelhouse, I understand if we keep moving on. I just wanted to throw it out to you.
Yeah, no. That's actually a very easy question to answer. There is one legal definition of blindness, and that is 20/200 visual acuity in the better seeing eye or less than 20 degree visual field in the better seeing eye. And all you need to do is get a letter from your eye doctor stating that you're legally blind, and that would certify you.
Well, great. No, I appreciate that. That's a very helpful point. A few more questions that have come in. We have a question about cataracts. Do cataracts make low vision worse, particularly like if you have macular degeneration?
Yes, because it limits the amount of light and the quality of light that comes in. So, yes. So it can affect your vision, but you would have to check with the eye doctor or at the eye exam to determine at what level do they think the cataract is affecting the vision more than the macular degeneration, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Yeah.
A couple questions about special glasses. Alfred from Oklahoma is wondering what type of specialist could get you some special glasses. We have also a caller from from New York that you know, heard that sometimes glasses like that can make them a little nauseous. I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit about kind of specialized glasses for low vision.
Yeah, so a low vision optometrist would have those specialized glasses, and again, it depends on what it is. Is it for reading? Is it for distance? So specialized glasses for distance could be a bioptic telescope. For reading, it could be a high-power reading microscope. It could be a prismatic glass. It could be a telemicroscope. So a low-vision optometrist should have those. The best thing to do is, if you're interested in them, contact them directly to see if they have what they think you need. Otherwise, just schedule an appointment, and they can determine that. And the other question was about getting nauseous, is that correct?
Yeah, heard someone from New York has heard that sometimes glasses like that can make someone nauseous.
And that's true, because they're high-powered lenses, and some people just adapt differently to it. One of the things that happens is when you make things bigger, which is a lot of what these glasses do, they magnify. So reading glasses for up close make things bigger. Telescopic glasses for distance, not only do they make things bigger, they bring it closer. So what happens with these higher powers is that it's very prone to movement. And the stronger the power, the more your head moves, the more nauseous you feel because of that movement.
That's interesting. Is that something that if a person communicated that to their specialist, would there be some alternatives around that, or is it an acclimation process?
Well, both. There's acclimation process, and then there's also there's different devices. Like different devices also have different optics. It all depends on what the patient's goals are and what devices we have that are available. So yeah, we could work around it too. And sometimes what I find is that if the higher powers or the stronger glasses make them more nauseous, then sometimes just reducing the power a little bit, making the print bigger, there's a lot of what we can do.
Great. And a few minutes ago, you were really helpful in delineating the different type of specialists. So a few questions about seeing a specialist. For example, how does one need a referral usually to see a specialist like in the categories you mentioned earlier?
Typically, yes. So, for example, if you're seeing an occupational therapist, they need a referral or a prescription from a licensed provider. So, and typically, most rehab settings, rehabilitation hospitals or rehab settings have occupational therapists there. But the one thing that's kind of, a little challenging is there's not as many occupational therapists that have specialized in low vision rehabilitation. So the key is trying to find that one specialized OT. So now regarding all the other therapists, the CRVTs, LVTs, they typically work with the state agencies or with schools or with the Veterans Administration hospitals as well. So, for example, if I feel that one of my patients needs a low vision therapist or a rehab teacher at the home environment, I will take the step to refer them to a state agency or a local agency, and then they'll assign them a caseworker, and then from there, then they get assigned the rehab specialists.
Well, great. And related to that, I was wondering if, sort of broadly speaking, you could address what tends to be covered by private insurance and also Medicare and Medicaid. And I guess related to that, is there a distinction if one's legally blind or not? If you could sort of address the broad topic of how does someone pay for this?
Okay. So the low vision evaluations are typically covered by Medicare, Medicaid, the insurances, because the optometrist should be billing in a certain way. However, you have to make sure that your insurance the provider that you're going to is on the panel of the insurance. Mm-hmm. A visit to an occupational therapist also depends on the insurance as well. Medicare clearly covers that. The rehab teachers or the LVTs, those are not covered by insurances because they're not licensed providers. However, if you're referred, if you go to them through the state, then the state usually covers it. The devices, on the other hand, are not covered by insurances, but they can be covered by the state agencies or vocational rehabilitation agencies through the state.
Well, no, I appreciate that. That's helpful. I think there's a lot of distinctions for folks. And just kind of curiosity, in your practice and the patients you see, is there sort of a common, most frequent way that you feel your patients' daily life is improved? Or sort of what's the area where you think that low vision services can best make an impact?
Well, with the patient's quality of life, I find that one of the most important goals for them is reading. So I feel that if I could just give them help them read again, read what they love to read again, I've accomplished my goal. I'd like to do. Yeah.
No, that is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, think about the. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no. Continue. I was gonna. Yeah. So I say reading, and also to improve. The one thing I failed to mention earlier is that these individuals, at the time of their diagnosis of a eye condition, there is this level of grief that they experience too, because there's going to be a process that they may lose their vision. So if I could help them, improve their quality of life, thus hopefully help them with their adjustment and help their grieving process.
Oh, no, then, I think that's fantastic. Yeah. And, we've seen with a lot of the researchers that Bright Focus has funded, whether it's in vision diseases or Alzheimer's, just that importance of intellectual and social activity and stimulation. So I think that's what you talk about really, seems like it can really make a difference. And, kind of on that same topic of quality of life and independence, talk for a minute about driving. My hunch is that might be a difficult topic, whether that's in your clinic or in people's homes. Could you comment on that?
Yeah, it's an extremely difficult topic for the individual, but a very, very important one. Very important one. Now, the one thing, what's very important to remember is that every state has a legal requirement, and some states are stricter than others. And in some states, you can drive with a low vision device, and others you cannot. So, we always have to address whether or not they meet the legal requirements, and if they do not, then the discussion follows about not driving.
Yeah. Any tips for family members that have to address this issue in some fashion?
Yeah, so what I try to tell the family members is, first, to be versed on the legal requirements, to be very open with their loved one, but not to be critical of them, and then then bring it up to their providers, bring it up to their doctors, come with them to one of the appointments, and just voice their concerns. What I try to reiterate to the patient and explain in great detail that first and foremost, I'm not taking their license away. I'm just relaying the information regarding their legal requirements. And second of all, I try to focus it direct, the concern on them, that there is a lot for them to lose if they're in a position where they shouldn't be in.
Yeah, that's a great point. Kind of related to reading and driving. If you have, when you come across patients that are still interested or need to stay in the workforce, any tips for how someone should address that with their employer? Because I think that could be awkward.
Yes, it's a very difficult one for some. But the most important thing to remember for these individuals is that they do fall under the Americans with Disabilities Act, so they cannot be discriminated against. And so the best thing to do is, when they're ready to discuss it with their direct, manager.
Any tips for how they should have that conversation?
Just explain, I think pulling them aside one day and just explaining what the difficulties were and then being open about their eye condition. The other thing is, I've had that conversation quite a bit with many patients as well, too. And, because I know a lot of individuals are at a fear of losing their job. There's a lot of fears there. There is an agency, it's a national agency called the Disability Rights Center. So they have pro bono attorneys that work for them who provide free legal advice on how to address certain issues like that. So I think, for example, a lot of my patients, when they bring it up to me, they still fear the legal consequence. I'm not an attorney, so I'll refer them to the Disability Rights Center. So they have a better, yeah.
No, I know obviously workplaces vary a lot, but are there sort of common type of accommodations that could be made?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the simplest ones is getting for people who are on the computer a lot, getting a bigger monitor and just increasing the font size. You know, that's a very simple one, and that's one where people around them won't have to know. Lighting makes a big difference too, getting a bigger light. Also if they're dealing with print, if they have print or paper that's too small to read, put it on a copier and make it bigger. Or we have magnifiers, you can just use a simple magnifier to make things a little bit bigger for them.
Well, that's good to know. It's good to hear that a topic that can be difficult for everybody involved seems, from the way you describe it, to have some very attainable, manageable mm-hmm. type of options.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of related to you talk about what an employer could do. Big picture, when you look at folks who need low vision services, is there a role that what's the best role that a family member can play to be helpful and supportive?
To be there, be open, and not be critical. And just be a listener too. And a lot of family members, like I see a lot of different dynamics that come into the office. And what I find is, for some who want to be independent, but the family member is hovering. They, it's the individual wants to be independent. No, I'm okay. So I think the best is just to meet somewhere in the middle and just be a supportive role. But then if you got the flip side of it, where some family members are having harder of a time coping with their loved one's vision loss mm-hmm. because they end up having the primary caregiver role too.
Yeah, no, so, I think that would be very, very challenging. And I know in a prior conversation, I understand that you now have a recently started or helped lead a support group,
mm-hmm.
is that? I was wondering just if you could tell us a little bit about what does your group do and kind of what's that experience been like for you as a professional to start in an organization, a group like that?
Oh, it's actually been wonderful. We started it back in January, so it's been running about 8 months now. It came up because one of our patients just felt isolated. He basically wanted to know if there were support groups available so he could talk to people who are in a similar boat that he's in. And, fortunately for me, I had social work intern that was working with me. Her father has macular degeneration and glaucoma. So when she was working with me, this all came about, and I said, "Do you want to help me put this together?" And she said, "Absolutely." So she and this other social worker are leading it with it. So we got very fortunate because one of the things with a support group is you want to have the right moderator to help direct it. So it's been great. I think there's about 25 to 30 registered members. We have people from all different backgrounds. One of the things that I found is that there is no real evidence on what the best way to start a support group is. So we had used other models from other conditions like cancer support groups to help us establish ours. So it's been very successful. We have, like I said, people from all different backgrounds, all different diseases, ages. I think our oldest is 87, our youngest is 20. And, they've really connected with each other as well, too.
Oh, well, that's great. It must be wonderful.
Yeah.
Let's turn to another question that we got. It has to do with the computer. We have a question from Pennsylvania about how do I... can a low vision therapist help me with special lighting for the computer? And I was wondering, Dr. Prasad, do you have any? I know you mentioned earlier about screens and fonts, but are there kind of other things that could help with computers or reading print materials as well?
Yeah. So the question about the lighting of the computer, now the monitors have become much better than before. So they're the LCD, they're flat screen, so they're they're much easier on the eyes. But you could also use, there's certain type of filters and that you can put on, could put over the computer. You could adjust the lighting internally as well, and that is something that a therapist can help with too. So someone who specializes in technology assessments can work with that. And also, with an employer, there is they have an IT department too. So the IT department can also help with that as well.
Yeah. Now, if someone's using a computer, looking at a screen, like using a desktop or laptop computer or watching television, does it make a difference if that room is on the brighter side or on the dimmer side? Does that have any impact on someone with low vision?
The lighter, the dimmer, it can, yes. Yep. So, for example, people with certain eye conditions such as glaucoma or diabetic retinopathy where they've had the laser treatments, they are very sensitive to glare or to excessive light and glare. So they wouldn't want it that bright, but someone with macular degeneration is on the other extreme, or on the other end, I should say, where they would prefer more light. So it all varies based on the patient.
That's great. Is that something a low vision specialist could help customize depending on a person's situation?
Absolutely, because it's very subjective. There's a lot of theory and there's a lot of science behind it, but in the end, it's very subjective.
Yeah, probably like most households where people fight over the thermostat and too many lights on. Or I don't think that's just my house. I think that's probably probably everywhere. Another question we got is how does one go about finding either a low vision specialist or an ophthalmologist in their area? Are there any common resources that could help?
Yeah. The two main resources, well, for a low vision specialist, a low vision optometrist, the American Optometric Association has a list. You can also contact the state agencies. They would have a list of low vision optometrists. And with an ophthalmologist, again, the American Academy of Ophthalmology is a great resource for, academy members or contacting your local or state agencies too.
Great. And we also have that information at at brightfocus.org. There's links that that take to those places. And I think it's really helpful. So Dr. Prasad, I just want to sort of wrap up today. You said you've been doing this for a number of years. Are there any kind of recurring themes or messages that you like to give to your patients, or is there a common misperception that you often try to rebut, or sort of any kind of big picture advice that you try to impart to your patients?
Yeah, I always tell them don't lose hope and don't give up. I get patients who, rightly so, they're frustrated, they're grieving, they're depressed, they're upset. There is hope out there when it comes to helping you become more functional. We can help you. That's our field. We can't bring back the vision that you've lost, that the patient's lost, but we can use what you have and make it better or make it more useful for you. And the key is to be to keep your hopes up, try to be motivated, and just let us help you.
Yeah, well, that is wonderful. And I think on that very inspirational note, I'd like to conclude the conversation. And Dr. Prasad, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm very confident that our listeners found a number of your points helpful in their daily life and their families' lives. On behalf of everyone at Bright Focus, Dr. Prasad, thank you very much for being a part of this. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. So this concludes today's Bright Focus chat.
The information provided in this recording is a public service of Bright Focus Foundation and is not intended to constitute medical advice. Please consult your physician for personalized medical, dietary, and/or exercise advice. Any medications or supplements should only be taken under medical supervision. Bright Focus Foundation does not endorse any medical products or therapies.